Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntris here. Good double feature for you today. Interesting conversations with Eric Powell, who's celebrating the Goon's 15th anniversary. We're going to be having a great conversation with Eric about what's going on. He just wrapped up one story arc about a week ago. The next story arc starts in January, and it's a very pivotal moment in the life of the Goon. And it's good to talk to Eric about that. And as always, we pick his brain on the comic market and other things. Eric Powell to start things off on today's Word Balloon. Then we're going to be talking to Mark Waid. And Mark was on the Aw Yeah podcast with Art and Franco. And initially was there to fulfill a Kickstarter obligation. They put it out there that people could debate Mark Waid. And we talked to one of the people that took advantage of that. But also, Mark made news this week about Archie. He and Fiona Staples are in charge of rebooting Archie. And that sounds really fascinating. So we talked to him about that. He has recently transplanted from L.A. to Indiana. So we talk about how that is for Mark. And just a good conversation in general, as we always get from Mark Waid, Art, and Franco, especially when the three of them are together. And I was happy to be a part of that. So that's how we're going to wrap things up on today's Word Balloon. Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. They got a very big sale going on, up to 70% off on select Marvel and DC titles. You can get artist editions from IDW on sale, and lots more. If you go to InStockTrades.com, you're going to find a lot of great deals waiting for you. For example, you can get the Batman and Robin hardcover volume 6, The Big Burn, 50% off. It's just $12.49. You can get Greg Rucka's Awesome Cyclops series, trade paperback volume 1, Starstruck, 50% off, $7.99. Nice to see that Brian Woods DMZ is getting the deluxe hardcover edition treatment from Vertigo. Book 3 is available at 50% off, $14.99. From our pal Mike Mignola, you can get Lobster Johnson, trade paperback volume 4, Get the Lobster, 42% off, $11.59. Master Keaton, one of my favorite mangas, and I don't have a lot of favorite mangas, but Master Keaton is a great manga and anime that I enjoy. Graphic novel volume 1, Ursawa, is 30% off. It's just $13.99. This is all available at InStockTrades.com. Check it out for yourself. You're going to find amazing deals waiting for you at great prices. InStockTrades.com. Word Balloon is also brought to you by the League of Word Balloon listeners. Thank you for your continued support. If you go to our Patreon page, WordBalloon.com has a tag that will get you there and a couple of videos explaining some of the premiums that we offer as well. And I really do appreciate the support. Word Balloon is free. It will always be free. But if you want to help the cause and can spare a couple dollars, you can go to WordBalloon.com and click on the tab there, or go to Patreon.com/WordBalloon. And that's the direct subscription page. And I appreciate the help. Thank you very much for helping keep the lights on and keeping me moving and going to various conventions and talking to people like we're talking to today. Happy to start things off with Eric Powell. 15th anniversary for The Goon happened in 2014. And, man, Occasion of Revenge is a great story. And it's going to lead into the next chapter for The Goon starting in February. Very exciting stuff. And really a pleasure to finally get Eric Powell to sit down and have a Word Balloon conversation for me. So we present it now. Here's Eric Powell. Eric Powell, welcome to Word Balloon. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, man. This is a long time coming, so thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Congratulations. I know this year was the 15th anniversary for The Goon, and we are very close. The next issue is number 50, correct, in terms of 50 Goon issues?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. So the first issue of Once Upon a Hard Time, the next miniseries, will be the 50th Dark Horse issue.
Excellent. Yes. So, yeah. You started with Avatar back in the day, the first couple issues?
Started with Avatar, and then I self-published for a little while, and then luckily for me, Dark Horse said, hey, we want it. So was able to jump over to them.
Excellent. I wanted to ask about self-publishing and the market today, but first let's talk about the recent stories. Occasion of Revenge just wrapped up last week as we're recording.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, great story. I love the aesthetic of the Goon. I like the town. I like your designs. And I love that classic kind of 30s, almost, pre-code movie feel to it that I see Is that how you perceive how you've set up the Goons world?
Well, it's definitely the visual, you know, take I'm trying to go for is kind of a, I've always envisioned it as kind of like a, you know, like a noir movie mixed with a, one of the classic Universal horror films, mm-hmm. you know? So you get that kind of like stonework and everything, but you, I wanted to create a feeling of they built like the industrial age on top of a medieval town, kind of a fantasy, you know, feel to it. But it's one thing I've been kind of disappointed with my own work is I feel I could do more establishing the environment a little bit. I try, but it's one of the things that I feel is a little could be a little bit more in the comic.
Okay, because I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel it, and certainly it's always part of the subtext, and certainly Occasion of Revenge, it's a direct story point that the coven feeds on the misery of the town, and certainly from the Goons' very beginnings that there is this problem and that, you know, everyone's misery is feeding the dark side of this town. And I assume as we move on to Once Upon a Hard Time, that's part of the overall theme of this bigger story that you're telling.
Yes, it definitely is. that is the majority of what Once Upon a Hard Time is about. It's about, you know, we establish a little bit more why the coven is so dead set on taking over the place and what benefit it has for them. And you learn a lot about the backstory of those characters a little bit and the internal struggle that the Goon is going through right now.
Yeah, if people haven't read Occasion of Revenge, they'll really enjoy it because it is this tight little, like you said, noir kind of story where, you know, the Goon is tempted by a femme fatale and the consequences have left him in a very dark place. And that's exactly where the mm-hmm. coven was hoping he would be, setting the stage for Once Upon a Hard Time.
Mm-hmm. That's a standard, you know, noir theme yep. of the femme fatale kind of thing. But I wanted to have that element in there, but also wanted to layer it, make it a little bit different where, the reader as well as Goon is being deceived by what's going on. I tried to set up enough red herrings to where the reader might think the story was going in a different direction. And then, you know, I wanted the reader to be just as blindsided as the Goon when it got to that point in the story.
That's awesome. I'm also a sucker for boxing. So I really appreciate Kid Gargantuan.
Yeah,
man, great. You know, really cool. And you know, I am. You know, I'm a big. I imagine you're a Turner Classic Movies watcher.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, it immediately made me think of films like Champion and Body and Soul and the setup and some of those things and stuff. And yeah, I mean, cool character and I'm
got a little bit of that. That on the waterfront thing going on there.
Hey man, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I got to know Bud Schulberg before he passed away. So that's awesome.
Oh yeah.
Oh hell yeah,
cool.
Man. Oh yeah, absolutely. And also I should mention, because while we're recording and I saw, that the man did a cover for you in the past, but I just saw mm-hmm. the Wired magazine story today that Jack Davis, the great artist, is finally stepping down.
Yeah.
And I've talked about Jack Davis with Tony Moore in the past, and I would imagine he mm-hmm. is an inspirational artist in your background as well.
He is a huge influence to me. He for the fact that he's one of those guys that could cartoon, but he also layered so much texture and everything into his art that he did this. It was a cartoon. It was a stylized version of reality. And yet he made it look three-dimensional and super realistic. And that's something I try to do with my own stuff. And, Jack Davis is just one of my all-time comic book heroes. And I was so thrilled that we actually got him to do a cover for The Goon, and I feel especially lucky now because it came so soon, you know, right before his retirement.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's kind of, it kind of blows my mind a little bit that we came that close to not getting that, which would have been sad. But yeah, it's a thrill to know that I was able to get a cover from him, because it really means a lot.
I also see, and I know Dave Stewart does a lot of your coloring as well, but I also see kind of similarities to Davis's style, the way that if it's Davis that colors himself or the people that have colored Davis, certainly in the post-Mad years, post-CC years, kind of the TV Guide, and the times I've seen him do covers, it has that kind of feel as far as the coloring of The Goon and comparing it to Davis's work.
Yeah, Davis did a lot of washes and watercolors and stuff on his line work for those covers, those paintings. And, you know, I do a lot of washes and stuff in my work as well. So I could see the similarity there. I mean, it's hard, you know, when you're that influenced by someone, it's hard to not get a little bit of their flavor, you know, into your work.
Sure. Do you... I wonder, are there classic Hollywood types that you saw as the Goon or Freddy or Norton or some of these characters? I spoke to Mike Norton, and I was thrilled to learn that Norton's Bar was indeed named after Mike. At least that's what he tells me.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, when we were both up-and-coming guys when he was living in Nashville, and, you know, before anyone cared who we were, and... we've been friends a long time, so I just as a nod to him, I named the bar after him in The Goon, not suspecting that the comic book was going to be at all successful. So it's kind of funny. A little bit of trivia there. I'm sorry, where were we going with this?
Well, I was asking about, I called Frankie Freddy, and I meant Frankie, obviously. But yeah, do you have any classic Hollywood types for some of these characters? To me, Frankie,
you know,
is very Don Knotts to me.
he's a little bit more Joe Pesci to me than Don Knotts, because I can't imagine Don Knotts being quite as violent as Freddy is.
Understood.
But, I'm actually a big Don Knotts fan too, though, so that's a compliment as well. But I wouldn't say that there's too much direct influence from any pre-existing character. Mostly these guys kind of slowly evolved out of, you know, things that I like to draw. You know, I was better at drawing big ugly guys, and I wasn't too good at drawing attractive characters. So that's kind of where The Goon sprang from. Where, you know, I wanted to do a book with a big, ugly, fun character to draw. And then the layers of the characters just kind of snowballed from that, you know, the initial doodles that I had done. But there is a movie, and it's I saw it after the fact, but I feel like it's the closest representation of The Goon I've seen on film, and it's Lee Marvin in Emperor of the North Pole.
Okay, sure. Okay.
If anyone out there hasn't seen that movie, you should definitely check it out. It's pretty cool. But it's got I'm drawing a blank. Who's that guy? Cabby from Escape from New York.
Oh, and Ernest Borgnine, of course.
Ernest Borgnine. It's got Ernest Borgnine in it and Lee Marvin. It's a pretty great movie. It's about this hobo going against a rail yard boss who is out to get him. And it's pretty. His characterization in that movie, it feels like The Goon to me. I'm like, if there was a live action Goon, that's what it should be. It should be like Lee Marvin in that movie.
That's excellent. And I really, when I looked at The Goon's face and think about The Goon's face, it absolutely reminded me of Lee Marvin. And I wasn't thinking of that movie. And then a non-Lee Marvin movie that I think thematically matches with The Goon is Hard Time or Hard Times with Charles Bronson and James Coburn.
Where, I haven't seen that.
That's a 30s movie where Bronson is a bare-knuckle boxer and Coburn is his, like, manager. And they're basically, you know, they just go around setting up unlicensed fights to, you know, literally pick up money for each bout and stuff.
Oh, I got to look that up.
Yeah, it's good.
it's pretty good.
Yeah, I think it'll match your sensibility. So, yeah, that's cool. And I'll check out Emperor of the North Pole. That's awesome because I'm always happy to discover more Lee Marvin films that I haven't really uncovered yet.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool. Hilarious. And I would honestly say that it's funny because Norton has said the same thing, that initially didn't feel like he drew attractive women. And I'll tell you, man, you know, the harpies when they're in their physical form and stuff, I think they're pretty hot.
I can do it, but it's harder for me to do than other stuff. I have to really work at it to do like a pinup style lady, because there's a subtlety to it that you have to have. You know, you put one line on someone's face and you could age them, you know, 10 years. So if you're doing a pinup, it's really an economy of style you kind of have to go for, which I naturally does not come to me. I kind of want to put lines all over everything, which is why I'm good at drawing ugly people, because you put someone with a big gnarled scarred face, you know, you can just go crazy with it and it's organic and you just kind of run wild. Where if you're trying to draw a child or a really attractive person, you kind of have to really be subtle with where you're putting down your lines.
Are you aware of Drew Friedman's work?
Maybe. I'm really bad at names. What did he work on?
He's an underground comics artist that, you know, has been doing it for a few decades now. And he did a lot of work for Heavy Metal and National Lampoon. And lately for Fantagraphics, he's been doing these books, Old Jewish Comedians, and does a lot of magazine work and really kind of accentuates the flaws in people's faces. And is kind of famous for doing Tor Johnson a lot from Plan 9 from Outer Space, and Rondo. And I always forget Rondo's last name, but great character actor who unfortunately had like gigantism, mm-hmm. and Rondo looks like he would fit in Goonstrays. You know who I'm talking about? That actor?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Drew, like I said, just like you said about you know, finding the flaws and the character lines in people and stuff. That's kind mm-hmm. of where Drew is, and I see it. So and yeah, like I said, Rondo would have been great casting in a Goon movie if it was made by Monogram back in like the 30s or 40s or something like that. You know?
That would have been awesome.
for the stories coming up, was it just like, I mean, is there a master plan of now is the right time? I mean, how organically and where did this thought of this bigger story that you're now telling? And I don't even know beyond the next story that starts. It starts in February, right? Once Upon a Hard Time?
Yeah.
Okay. And so.
This has been kind of building in my mind ever since I worked on Chinatown, which was a big turning point moment in the series. And now, I don't know quite how to describe this without giving anything away. It's going to be Once Upon a Hard Time is pretty significant. It's the end. If you're going to call the series up from the very first issue to now an arc, it's the end of that arc. So there's significant changes coming. The way I'm doing the book will change quite a bit after this miniseries.
Cool. Excellent. And I mean, you know, you've had this great association with Dark Horse. They leave you to your own devices. Mm-hmm. I mean, who is your, is Scott your editor? Scott Alley?
Scott Alley is my editor, yeah.
So is it just, you know, this is what I'm thinking, and Scott's like, great, do it. I mean, you know, what kind
pretty
of feedback
much,
do you get?
Yeah.
Okay.
I bounce ideas off of him, and he's like, all right, great, go for it. And then, you know, if I have any questions or anything about, you know, or run into any roadblocks in the story, you know, I'll bounce it off of them. But they leave me alone to do whatever I want to do. So it's a good relationship.
I know in the last couple of years, there was talk of a Goon movie, and you guys were trying to get something going with that. David Fincher mm-hmm. was involved. What is the current status of any multimedia Goon appearances?
Well, we're still in the same position. We did the Kickstarter a couple of years ago mm-hmm. to raise money for the animatic. About 4 or 5 months ago, we just did the first final, not the final, but the first full edit of that animatic. And now we're going back and doing edits and, fine tuning it. Because we know we're only going to get one shot at this. If this animatic, if we put it out there to these studios and it's less than stellar, you know, we know that's going to blow our shot. So we want to put every effort we can into making this, as good as we possibly can and, blow them away when they see it. So they have a hard time, turning us away again.
Understood. And Fincher is still involved then?
Yeah, everybody's still on board. We're just trying to get a studio behind it.
Excellent. I remember seeing the segment on Carson Daly's show, Last Call, when mm-hmm. When Fincher was on and talking about the Kickstarter and stuff. So, do you feel like you had a good experience with Kickstarter?
Yeah, we had an amazing experience. We exceeded our goal by quite a bit. We've used every ounce of that money to get the to work on the to do all this work on the animatic, and it's there's some pretty great stuff in it. I'm chomping at the bit to get it out there, and we're still going to do a screening for the backers as soon as we get this in a space where we can show it off.
Cool.
I don't know exactly when that's going to be yet, though.
Understood. And I'm forgetting that you had some good people. Wasn't Paul Giamatti going to be Frankie?
Paul Giamatti, yeah. Paul Giamatti is doing the voice of Frankie, and Clancy Brown is doing Goon.
Awesome. Very cool, man. That's hilarious. I know absolutely see the fit with Paul as Frankie, so that's cool. I'll be honest. Frankie Brown, what has Frankie Brown done? I know,
I'm sorry?
What is Frank? If you said Frankie Brown is doing the Goon?
Oh, Clancy.
Oh, Clancy Brown. Holy shit, I know who Clancy Brown is. That's perfect. Wow. That's excellent, man.
Yeah.
God, I love him and everything he does. Jesus Christ. Even Sleepy Hollow, he's kicking ass, when he pops back. I was like so excited that first episode. It's like, oh, he's going to be on. And then, oh, he's dead. But they flashback, so it's all right. He still pops up. That's very cool, man. Hilarious. Good call, man. That's terrific. Well, and again, too bad you can't break out the Ouija board and get a Lee Marvin or somebody like that. But Clancy Brown's pretty goddamn good.
There's so many. It would be, you wish you could do that thing where you could just pull every classic actor out of everywhere and make them a character, That would be amazing, but,
So, as you said, between Avatar and Dark Horse, you were doing things, and I know Albatross is in the name of your publishing company. Is it Flying Albatross? What was the name of your company?
It was Exploding Albatross.
Even better. That's fantastic. Yeah. And I know Billy the Kid had the imprint and everything. Does the Goon still have mm-hmm. that imprint, even though it's through Dark Horse?
We throw it in there sometimes in the trade paperbacks. Just put Albatross Exploding Funny Book Studio in there.
Right.
As a nod to it or whatever, but I don't use it too much anymore.
Okay, and of course you've got your Stanley Soapbox persona as well, and I forget his name right now.
Dwight Albatross.
Of course.
That was a fun thing, yeah.
Excellent. Like, you see what's happening now, and I Kickstarter was for the animatic, but how do you see the what's going on right now in comics in terms of self-publishing? And as someone yourself who, during the lean years was like, all right, I'm going to put this out myself. And then obviously, got Dark Horse, found the relationship with Dark Horse to work and everything. But how do you see what's going on today in the market for creators?
Well, The crowdfunding thing is amazing for comics because, you don't have to depend on a publisher pay attention to you anymore. If you just want to, if you have a really quality product, I mean, people share it on the internet and there it is. If people want it, they'll give you their money. And it's a great, thing to help people, but it's also an interesting gauge of what people want. Because if people look at it and they go, like, that doesn't look that hot, you know, then they probably aren't going to give you their money. But yeah, crowdfunding is definitely a thing that's helping out a lot of creators. And, as far as the industry goes right now, I think this is one of the best times ever because you got so much, different material out there, different, genres and everything that, that are being successful. It's not just like people are throwing this out there and it's like, well, we sold, you know, a few thousand copies here and there. And then, you know, you've got stuff actually selling as much as Marvel and DC, which is great.
True. I always wonder too, and I think a lot of early start, you know, creators that are kind of early in their careers have that, you know, frustration that there is so much good stuff out there that I think fighting for shelf space and attention as you know, as freeing and as great and diverse as things are, I think it's, you know, really tough to get your voice heard unless you've got, you know, established people like yourself. I mean, God, 15 years doing The Goon and stuff. You've built this audience and you built it, you know, very Johnny Appleseed, one reader at a time. But I mean, that's the thing, you know, now for people, I think it's kind of tough too to, you know, because they are competing directly with not only DC and Marvel, but self-starters like yourself and Hickman and, you know, Kirkman and some of these other guys as well.
Well, I've said this 100 times before, but, you know, it is true. This is the only industry, the only entertainment industry I can think of where shops stock their shelves off of the company logo on the comic rather than the comic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's no movie theater out there that says, I'm only playing Paramount movies.
Yeah,
you know?
You're right.
So that's been the major flaw, I think, in our industry, and it's held us back. And, you know, we've got these great classic characters, and I grew up reading, you know, I was a big Marvel kid, and I love Jack Kirby and all that stuff. However, there's people out there that just aren't into that, you know, and the comics are too great of an art form and too broad of an art form to limit just to that thing. And the industry is doing itself a disservice if that's all they look at. We need to diversify and we need to grow and we need to start bringing in new readers that aren't necessarily wanting the Marvel and DC, you know, kind of stereotypical stuff. You know, there's people out there that love it. I mean, I love those characters too, but that's not what I want day in, day out. I want something new. I want, you know, Hellboy. I want Bone. I want, you know, all this other different kind of stuff. And it's a great thing that in the industry now, that stuff is gaining ground. And we actually have a broader audience now than we've had in quite a long time. So I think we're heading in a good direction.
I remember when you did kind of come out with your videos and made your statements, and really I think you've just clarified where you were coming from, and I agree with you. I also think, and you're a little younger than me, but I almost think that it is kind of like readers need to kind of develop their reading palette, and that they start with the basics, and the basics are the Marvel and the DC heroes.
Yeah.
And then after a while, you know, if they stay with the hobby, their tastes do evolve. Because I know that just naturally happened for me at some point in the 90s where I was just like, all right, this is fine, but is there anything else? And luckily, you know, I caught a good wave when there was, you know, experimentation in other genres and people were coming out with original ideas. And like you said, yeah, right now we're in the midst of it flourishing like that, and it is getting better. How do you see Do you have thoughts of what you can do unconventionally to get the word out? I mean, the animatic certainly is, I think, a very smart move specifically for the Goon. But are there other things that you can share and maybe suggest to these creators that they, you know, are trying to get their voices heard?
If you're an up-and-coming creator, you have to take advantage of the internet now. One, it doesn't cost you anything. Mm-hmm. And two, it's such an easy way to get your material out there. You've got all these websites now, DeviantArt and all that stuff, where you can just, you know, post your stuff online and hundreds of people can see it, and you didn't pay a dime for that.
True.
And that's a tool I didn't have when I was, you know, coming up in comics. Web comics are another great way. I mean, if you don't have the money for publishing and you just want to get, you know, your stuff out there and get people to pay attention to it, putting out a web comic is a great idea.
Agreed. Absolutely. And, yeah, you know, and I'm really glad I had seen it happen that, you know, you kind of, and I want you to tell me how it happened, but I know you helped Norton get Battle Pug over at Dark Horse. So, like, yeah, tell me what your involvement was to, like, make that happen.
That's all Mike. That's all Mike. He, I had seen Battle Pug. I had seen him do drawings and stuff of it before, and I do this with everybody, though. I'm like, you need to be doing your own book. You need to be doing your own book. Because, I mean, it's... Mike Richardson has told this story to me a couple of times, but he'll go up to guys and, you know, when he's trying to woo creators to Dark Horse or something, he'll say, "Who drew Batman 2 years ago?" And they'll go, "I don't know." "Who drew Wolverine 2 years ago?" "I don't know." "Who drew Hellboy 2 years ago?" "Mike Mignola."
Damn straight.
"Who drew Sin City?" "Frank Miller." You know, and it's that kind of thing, like... You can have an amazing run on a comic for one of the big two companies, but if you really want to cement your place where no one can take anything away from you, you can never get fired off of your own book. The only way to do that is to have your own book, have your own character. And so I tell that to everybody. And when I saw Mike Norton, and these Battle Pug things that he was doing, and I was just like, you got to do that. You got to do. It was a great idea, and I just was trying to encourage him as the most I could that you know, this is something that you should be doing. And then, you know, I said something to Scott Alley about Mike Norton, you know, having this thing, and I was trying to get, you know, people over to Dark Horse because I wanted them, you know, I always want more creator-owned stuff there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Scott was already interested in working with Mike. So I really didn't do anything there other than, you know, give Mike a little moral support.
Okay. Well, I had heard, too, that you helped Rebecca Sugar, one of the Adventure Time people, out.
I didn't help her with that, but I do take full credit for discovering Rebecca Sugar before anybody.
That's cool.
Because, I was at a Small Press Expo years and years and years ago, and Rebecca came up. She's a very shy person, and she gave me this comic. I can't remember the title of it right now, but I get a ton of stuff at conventions, so a lot of it is not very good, unfortunately, but I get a ton of stuff, and I was upstairs in my hotel room flipping through what I had gotten from people that day, and her book really stuck out. It wasn't the greatest art, it wasn't the greatest story, but it had some funny bits here and there, and there was a lot of, you could see that there was a lot of potential there, that this person could really hone this and do something good. So I think her email was in the comic, and I wrote her and said, "Hey, this, I thought your comic was pretty good. Keep it up." And from there, we had kept in contact, And again, I was just encouraging, trying, you know, to get her to do more comics. And she was going to school for animation, which was clearly a smarter path than comics, because she went on to work on Adventure Time, and I believe she co-created Steven Universe, or created herself.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So she's gone on to a very successful career in animation. I did publish through Albatross Exploding Funny Books her comic Pud Davis.
Cool. Hilarious. That's fantastic, man. Well, that's excellent. And I mean, are you, what are your convention plans for 2015? Can you tell us some shows that you're going to be at?
Right now they're not too concrete. I will be at San Diego Comic-Con again.
Cool.
I think I'm going to be at Heroes.
Cool.
The rest are kind of up in the air right now.
Understood. Well, and you know, I know you were even saying, I saw in other interviews, that getting back to this bi-monthly schedule for the Goon was kind of a tough transition. Do you feel like you're at a good place where you can, you know, put out six issues a year?
Oh yeah, I'm doing more work right now than I've done in a long time. It's finding the rhythm to get back into it. So it's I'm doing some pretty good stuff right now, I think.
I agree with you, man. No, honestly, the last story was outstanding. And as you have trumpeted about this story, it sets the table for what's to come in Once mm-hmm. Upon a Hard Time. I like this, and I've read you say this as well, that you make every issue count. And I can attest to that, that you get a full read for your, you know, $3 and change each time, you know, somebody buys a Goon comic. The first arc that just wrapped up, that's over. And now, you know, we move on to Once Upon a Hard Time. Is that act two? And is there an act three? I mean, how would you characterize what's to come?
This, you could take Occasion of Revenge and Once Upon a Hard Time and make one giant story out of it. So it is definitely the second act of this this story.
But as you said, too, it's really the close of what's been going on in the Goon since issue one.
Yes.
Very cool,
man.
It
definitely is.
That's excellent. Well, congratulations, man. You've been very kind with your time.
Thank you.
I see we're slightly past it, so I'll let you get back to making the donuts. You know, it's nice to talk about them and at it via conventions, but that means someone's not getting a page or whatever.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. But no, continued success, man. Honestly, it's great to
Thank
see.
You.
Yeah, man. It's great to see people who have their own vision succeed and put out great product. Hopefully, you'll continue to get more readers. And God, man, good luck with the Animatic. Once that's up
Thanks.
And fired up. Yeah. And down the road, man, happy to have you back, and we can talk more story specifics and pick your brain a little bit more.
Cool. Definitely. I appreciate it.
Okay. Now a more loose kind of conversation with Mark Wade and Art and Franco. This is part of the most recent Aw Yeah podcast featuring Mark Wade. But we trimmed it down just to the Mark Wade stuff because, you know, if you want to hear the rest, I urge you to go to the Aw Yeah feed at awyeah.libsyn.com or on iTunes. Look for the Aw Yeah podcast with Art and Franco. And I always post it in my Facebook feed as well. But check it out. It's always good. And go to awyeahcomics.com and you can get the podcast there as well and subscribe. But Mark was great. And as I said earlier, this was to fill a Kickstarter premium that Mark was willing to volunteer for, where he would debate a listener on their favorite superhero. But as you'll hear, the guy's favorite superhero is Superman, and Mark's favorite superhero is Superman. So instead, we just had a conversation about various runs and what we like about Superman. It's, you know, at the drop of a hat, Mark Wade can fill an hour talking about Superman, and we're very happy to have him do that. But also, of course, Mark was making news this week because he and Fiona Staples were announced to be doing the reboot of Archie. They're going to have a new Archie #1 and start at the very beginning the first meetings of everybody, everyone's favorite Riverdale teenagers meeting for the first time. And it's in great hands with a very talented writer like Mark Waid and a very inventive artist like Fiona Staples. I think it's going to be excellent. And I think a lot of people are excited about this combination for the Archieverse. So without further ado, let's dive into our conversation with Mark Waid, Art Baltazar, and Franco, part of the Aw Yeah podcast presented now on Word Balloon.
Why, hello.
Hello.
Oh, my. Hello, mystery guest here. I'll be like John Cameron Swayze or whatever. Please sign
in.
Thanks.
You are now on the air. We are recording this live.
What? What will this do to my witness protection plans? Okay. All good.
Hey, I know who that is. Oh, we lost Artie.
We lost
no!
Is he there? Did he pop off?
I think he got too excited.
Guest star from The Flash.
He popped off. He popped off all right. Yeah. Yep. All good.
Oh, we've been talking about Karis the whole time.
I'm doing work.
It is the goodly Mr. Mark Waid.
It is.
Yay!
Archie Comics writer Mark Waid. That's me.
Written up in the New York Times. Serious heat there, as they would say the business Mark.
Within 24 hours of the announcement, congratulations, man. Yeah, if people don't know, Mark is the new writer starting with Archie at Square One with art by Fiona Staples, and I'm sure Mark will tell us a little bit more about it.
Editor in chief too, I heard.
No, although that would be cool. So
let me ask you this question: since we got you here on the Johnny on the spot, Johnny.
Yeah.
Betty or Veronica?
Oh, baby.
There was an audible squeal. Did you hear that?
I know.
Get squeezed. That's what happened.
My heart goes to Midge. You know,
Midge. Yay! I liked Midge too, man.
Yeah, Veronica fan. For me.
You money chasing gold digger, you.
No, I like the challenge. I want her to tell me. I want her to tell me to get lost. Yeah.
I'm counting on Waid remembering there's like one short story where Betty decides she doesn't know what to do with her hair. So she just lets it like straight down or whatever and looks hot. And all the boys are like hanging with Betty and Archie can't get near her.
That's right.
And everyone's like, wow, Betty, schwink.
Yep.
So, yeah, that did it for me, Betty. Yeah. All right. That brought the conversation to a halt. So what can you tell us, Mark? Is it a reboot? How would you describe what you're doing for Archie?
Yeah, they called me and they said, let's go back to square one. Let's do Archie Comics number one, and we will take it completely from scratch, and you can tell whatever kind of stories you want. And I was all over that because I thought the challenge of being funny and dramatic at the same time is going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, trying to figure out a way to relaunch it and give it the face of the 21st century without doing just dumb token stuff like, Jughead's black just because, you know, that's just condescending. Like that's just, you know, that's really tacky. So the question becomes, how do you sort of integrate the cast and how do you make it not just a bunch of white kids?
So did you make Archie black instead?
So I made Archie black. Exactly. So it's
awesome.
Made it from Chicago.
It's actually the way we're playing it is that, and this doesn't really give anything away, but Veronica is sort of seen but not sort of heard but not seen, if you will, in those first few issues. Like we know there's a new rich girl coming to town. We've heard stories of this Lodge family, this big giant. Super rich family, but we don't know about the daughter. We've heard rumors. Is she ugly? Is she pretty? Is she smart? Is she stupid? Does she have an evil twin named Veronica? We don't know. So and all the kids in school are talking about it. So and I've always said without Veronica around, Reggie's a lot less interesting until you get Veronica on the scene. And so really right off the bat, we'll start with the three main characters, Betty, Archie, Jughead, and some of the other kids in school and be able to get them in pretty quickly so that it's not just a bunch of white faces.
Oh, cool. So you're doing it as if they're meeting for the first time.
Yeah. Characters.
And you're working with this really talentless hack artist.
I know.
Fiona Staples.
I know. When they said that, I was like, I was leaning toward the project to begin with, but when they started talking about the kind of people if they wanted to do these books, and Fiona's name was at the top of the list, we all thought, well, that's amazing. That's a great get.
That's cool.
And she's a huge Archie fan too, on top of everything else. She knows this stuff really well. So it was an easy sell with her because she's a big fan. So
that's nice. Great. And you know, I would imagine with Fiona drawing that Jughead will have like ram's horns or something like that, right?
Well, what something's under that hat? He has to be wearing that hat for a reason. Yeah.
You know, all these alternate covers that all the great artists have been doing, like and now I'm suddenly blanking, but Jill Thompson and
Cliff Chang and
Cliff Chang, of course.
Alex Ross.
Winslade. Yeah, Alex Ross, Bill Winslet. I mean, that's the thing. They've been so ambitious from a cover standpoint, and it's great to see now that with Roberto running things. I always say his name, Roberto Aguirre Scarza?
Yeah, close enough, yeah.
All right, there we go. For Rock and Roll.
But either way, yeah.
Sarcasa, you're right. No, it's Sarcasa.
Thanks for playing.
Exactly. But no, it's cool that, you know, and I've talked to Alex Segura about, you know, what they're doing with the Red Circle Heroes and stuff, and it's awesome that John Goldwater running Archie is kind of going in these bold directions.
Yeah.
I like that guy.
I like that guy a lot. I really do. Yeah. I had not spent any time with him until last weekend, and then, you know, we hung out over the weekend and talked about the plans and the company in general. And no, he's got a lot of energy behind him, and he's really enthused, which is terrific.
Did he mention me at all?
He didn't say anything. I can honestly say I didn't hear him say anything bad about you.
Oh, okay.
is it – because we've heard Fiona's only on for the first three issues, because certainly Saga fans are like, oh, no, what does this mean?
Yeah.
And it's like –
no, there has to be more Saga.
There will be. But the door is open to her to do whatever she can, whenever she can. I don't think she said I'm only doing three for the rest of my life. It's just that she needs to make sure that Saga's in the rotation. And I'm not at liberty to tell you who's queued up at that point, but you know, trust me, that's the sort of caliber of guys that the Archie crew has been able to call in.
Understood. And like I said, talking to Segura about what they're doing with the Dark Circle Heroes and stuff. I mean, they got top writers and top artists really revamping the Black Hood and the Shield and certainly the Fox, what you and Dean have been doing and stuff. So, yeah, you're already a friend of the company and stuff.
Exactly.
For the Archie run, are you how long are you on, have they said?
Indefinite. I mean, it really is kind of
excellent.
Me to play as long as I want to play. So I seem to be welcome there, and that's great.
Nice.
So we got to get you or Roberto to now entice Brubaker to do that long-awaited Jughead stuff that he's always wanted to do. And I'm totally serious.
Yeah.
Mr. Head. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
That's Forsyth P. Jones III to you, young man.
Oh, that's true.
You are a genius, sir. Yeah. I like it. There you go. There's your white kryptonite from
that's
the Archieverse. Right.
By the way,
there.
You ever add that periwinkle kryptonite to the Wikipedia?
Oh, man. I knew there was something I got to do later on tonight. Let me get on that. By the way, when I said Forsyth P. Jones III, I don't know if you could tell, but I had my pinky up in the air.
Oh, yeah. So.
Drinking some tea.
Because it's classy.
What's Pop's real name? Do we know Pop's real name?
Forsyth. P. Pop.
No, I mean,
I don't know. I don't think we know. But I'm sure I will be corrected. So
Pop pops.
Yeah.
Did the married life stuff ever like make you kind of want to do like Archie in the future and do like the stuff that Copperberg
he is
and,
doing Archie in the future, Johnny?
True.
That's what I'm doing. Archie 2015. It's in the far future.
Yeah.
It's true.
No, I think it's great, but that's the stuff that really appealed to me was being able to do, you know, these kids in their real sort of prime incarnations, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
So you're combing the high schools for conversation now, Mark? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
What's that creepy? I'm only taking notes. You go about your business. Continue with your lunch.
It's research. Hi. It's research. Hi.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm walking around the high school. In a trench coat, doing research.
So, what did you think of the Star Wars trailer?
That was awesome.
Did you like that?
I love that, man, dude. Yeah. We, you know, The Falcon just swooping right up at the mute. Oh, that was the moment. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He cheered out loud and scared the kids.
The kids
happened,
were like,
Daddy, what happened?
What is Star Wars, Daddy? I don't understand.
Yeah, we just watched Return of Jedi yesterday, me and my son. And he said to me, wait, Leia is his sister? I thought that was cool.
That's awesome. He's the last kid in the world who doesn't know, but that's awesome to find out. That's cool, though. Like, that's 'cause the moment we all found out, that was really cool.
Yeah, and you know, we watched I have the DVDs, the special edition ones.
Yeah.
So at the end, you know how they have they took the old guy out as the ghost, and they put the young Anakin.
Yeah.
And that confused my son.
Yes.
He said, who's that? Why is that? What is that? I had to tell him that was young Anakin. He goes, but they didn't even show him in this movie. So I'm like, see?
Yeah.
I wish George was watching it.
Did he get upset, laugh, or chuckle when he said, Chupa Chowa, Sebulba?
Oh, we didn't even watch that one.
Okay.
I'm not going to show him that till later.
Or at all.
When he's 27, maybe.
Jesus. Hey, Mark, you moved, and have you set up a new Fortress of Solitude? Is the big yellow key pointing the direction and everything?
I am in process, in fact. I'm in process of setting up the fortress here. So one room at a time. So
understood.
It's gonna be awesome someday, but it literally is. I mean, I have a house as an office because you can buy a house for nothing in Indiana. But the house that I bought, you know, it's shaky on the inside. I mean, it looks great on the outside. It just needs a lot of work on the inside. So the idea is one room at a time. So
okay,
I have my one room right now. That's all I need. And then, you know, over the years, we'll do another room. I do have all my stuff here, though. So it's just waiting to be unpacked. So
do you have dogs underneath your porch?
I do if there's anybody listening who wants to come rob me. Yeah. So
you had to clean them out.
Yeah.
Right, all you dogs.
Are you installing bat poles for the upper deck to get to the basement very quickly?
Well, not now that you've told everybody that. This is cool. This is the God's honest truth that the house that we're living in across the street, we actually found a secret room inside that house near the end of all the renovation. No one had caught it. It's one of those houses that – it's one of those old Victorian houses that where it's been remodeled.
Was it insulated with a Superman #1?
No, but I was hoping there'd be like a skeleton in there or something, or like a treasure chest or something. But it was cool because it was one of those houses that's been remodeled so many times, right? That there were doors on the outside that didn't go anywhere. Like there's, you know, there were windows on the outside that don't match up the rooms inside. And then we were out there one day near the end of construction. This is after we've already installed a bunch of stuff and put a bunch of walls up and stuff. We realized, wait a minute, there's a window on the outside of the house that doesn't match up with anything on the inside of the house. So we went back in and we looked at the top of the landing at the stairs where we thought there was a blank wall. And sure enough, you got the sledgehammers and there's a whole hidden room back there.
And that's the portal to go to Dr. Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum.
Exactly.
And he and Wong are getting wide watching MeTV. What? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, there's an old guy watching TV in there the whole time. Close the door.
To my stories. Go away.
About time someone opened up this wall.
Shut the window. I can't see. It's too bright.
So are you enjoying the easy pace of Indiana?
I am, in fact. I am. I sound hesitant, but that's only because it's pouring down rain right now, and I don't know – this water from the sky thing is as a Los Angeles guy, but
I can appreciate that. Yes.
See,
that,
now you're a Hoosier.
I'm a full-time Hoosier now.
Are you going to embrace the sports? Yeah. You're going to embrace the sports teams now too.
It's 52. Years.
Apparently not.
52.
Don't do it.
I, you know what? It's a little late in the game for me to look at something like that.
The sports ship has passed Mark
sports
by. It's all right.
Me by.
It's all right, bud. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, are we? Should we? You know, we should tell people why you're here, obviously, and what the plan is.
Yeah, why am I? Why am I here again?
I have no idea. Johnny just said, "Call Mark Wade." I have no idea.
I'm sleeping.
Well, no, you know it better than I do.
This is part of our Kickstarter obligations
yes,
that we're trying to fulfill, And the goodly Mr. Mark Wade had said to us way back when that if you want to charge people for me to argue, I could do that.
Yeah.
And we –
as opposed to you doing it for free, which
exactly. Normally I give that stuff away, right. But for you, I'm in charge.
Because you're gonna argue why Superman was better than Batman or Spider-Man or Aquaman or
yeah, whoever your favorite comic book character is, I will explain to you why Superman is cooler than that character. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Ooh,
we have two people queued up. To argue. One person I can't contact, so he's not queued up, and the other person said about another 5 minutes or so. So we will be calling him because we were supposed to call this guy later, but I just contacted him and said, I can't reach the other guy. You ready now? He goes, give me 5 minutes. So
yeah. He's preparing his files. Yeah. He's got to get all of his, you know, it's like a court case or whatever, you know.
And that man is John Byrne. So
right. John Byrne hates me. So it's
one
okay.
Can only – hi. I have a few things I'd like to say about Wolverine.
If you haven't listened to our podcast, that's our John Byrne voice.
We turned him into Ed Wynn or Captain Beach Fuzz from the Rocky and Bullwinkle
characters. True. I knew a man with a wooden leg named Smith, says John.
In the meantime, I did add another caller. Scoot's on the line.
What?
Oh, yeah, ScootMcMahon.com.
Scoot McMahon himself is here.
He's there somewhere. Maybe I lied. He's not there anymore.
Are you speaking Scoot? No.
We're running a tight ship here.
I see his avatar here.
I see his avatar as well.
He's not here.
Is that how you say it? I've been calling it a Vader.
Well, that's Darth Vader.
Yeah, if there's a group of them and they're Sith Lords, then yeah, it's a Vader. But, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's if they're trying to get away from people. He's a Vader.
Ladies and gentlemen, the comedy stylings of the Mayet team.
Thank you.
When we watched Empire Strikes Back, me and my son, and when Vader says... I'm your father. My son says, wait a minute. I thought Anakin was Luke's father. Thank you, man. You could edit that out.
Sorry.
Here's another one for you.
That's Franco's Alan Arkin for you.
What did the buffalo say to his offspring when he went off to college?
I don't know that one. Bazooka Joe, tell me.
My son.
Oh, I get it now.
Oh, man.
Wow. Man, you got it for the 10-cent joke book tonight. That's good, man.
I like that. That was good.
Franco, putting the K in comedy.
Exactly. Is it no wonder his children's show was canceled after 3 episodes?
Well, there was the thing with the restraining order. That didn't help it. So
that's right.
And the naked girls on there.
They told me I couldn't wear my upside-down snowman sweater.
I bet Mark knows that there is a naked girl story on a children's show, Soupy Sales.
Yes. Yeah, I know about this.
Yeah.
Yep. He used to open the mystery door and like different people would pop out, and one time just a balloon popped out, and that's because actually there was a naked woman dancing for Soupy.
Yep.
Hey, all the kids are gonna love this.
Right, off camera, there she is.
Yep. Now back to Popeye.
Okay.
Now explain to your listeners who Soupy Sales is.
That's all right. That's what Wikipedia is
he's
for.
Kind
dude,
of
you know what? I'll explain it if everybody in the audience sends me a dollar.
If anybody sends a picture of a president, that's what it was. Your picture of your favorite president. That's what he asked for. He actually asked for dollars. He just said to his children listeners, send me some pictures of presidents like from your parents' wallets. And then he got $100 in the mail.
Nice.
I'm about to say something, but I'm afraid that it's going to spark an hour conversation.
Well, if you do that, then I'll add the other caller real quick. So.
Oh, okay. I watched a movie yesterday, first time ever. I watched some of it. It was on in my house, I should say that. It was with Lucy and Desi. And
yeah.
I never saw it before, the long trailer.
The long, long trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. But he kept calling her Stacy, and she was calling him Ralph or something.
Nikki with an N.
Yeah, that was very strange. And I don't know why.
They were actors. They were acting. They were actors.
Yeah, they were capitalizing on the popularity of the TV show, and this is a chance to watch them in color and on the big screen.
But they were acting the same. They were the same
people.
Oh,
yeah. Nobody ever accused Desi or Naz of having a huge range. No offense, but
that's not what she said.
No,
ladies and gentlemen. Oh, that's what they're calling it now. The range.
the rain.
Exactly. Hello, honey. Check out my cargo over here, Fred.
Because he was singing, too.
I believe
she was cook and stuff.
The long
I couldn't take it.
Eat. All right. Everybody hold on to that thought because we'll get back to that. I am now adding somebody to the conversation. Hopefully Scoot. They'll pick up.
Jamie Farr?
Oh, there he is. Scoot. Now Scoot shows up when I call the other guy. There we go.
Been here the whole time.
Juan? Is that you?
You can call me Rick, guys.
Rick. All right.
Yes.
All right, Rick. Hey.
You are on the air with a whole bunch of people right now. There's John Suntress, Scoot McMahon, Art Balthazar, me, and Mark Wade.
And your star, Mark Wade. So
how's it going, guys? How's it going?
Good.
Awesome. Great.
Are you ready?
Start.
Are you ready for your
time? Sorry. Right? Just a little bit. I'm just anxious, man. That's all it is.
No. All good.
Have you prepared your case? Because we're like the Supreme Court, and you've got to kind of like, you know, we're your judges.
Okay.
And do you know you know the rules of the game, right? You have to strip down, bare chested.
Refresh me, please.
Refresh him, Johnny. Refresh him with the rules, Johnny.
Well, I no, there are no rules. So I guess we could make it a time limit. I've got a timer running, so if you want,
yeah, an hour, 90 minutes.
I guess you're going to compare your favorite superhero to Mark's argument that Superman is better than your favorite superhero.
Now, does that mean I win by default because Superman's my favorite as well, or?
You win. You win the night, sir. You are absolutely correct in that.
You could argue different favorite. Supermans.
Yeah, you could go with Earth 2 Superman, your golden age. Yeah, which era of Superman is a superior Superman? How about that?
That, you know what? That sounds freaking cool. I think we can go with that.
I see. We were already prepared.
He's all hopped up now. He even swore. He said freaking.
I like it.
Oh, my freaking ears.
This could get – well, Rick, what is your favorite era of Superman?
Well, you know what? I grew up with Superman and with different incarnations, and at least for me, wow, that's a great question.
They're going to get harder, right?
You know what? I'm going to have to go with who I was introduced with, and I know that you know he's been given a lot of flack over the years.
Uh-oh.
I'm excited. But it could be him.
Let me set it up. I got to set this up at least.
Yeah.
When I was little, my dad, you know, he recently retired, but he was a special education teacher for over 20 years. But at the public school where he worked in, they had this really cool section of the library there at the school. And I don't know if you remember this, guys, but they had those old collections like Superman from the 30s to the 70s and Batman from the 30s to the 70s.
Yep.
They had one for Wonder Woman as well. And I remember him bringing all those books, like, almost every other week. He would always max out the full time that he had and then take it back and recheck it out again. So I don't think anybody else got to read those books. Let's just say that. So when I remember reading the Superman one, and that's where basically my love of Superman started. And the one that just really, really got my attention was the Dennis O'Neill and Neil Adams. You know, that little run right there, you know, No More Kryptonite. That image of the sand Superman just got, you know, ingrained in my brain.
Ingrained. See what he did there? Sand, ingrained. Did you get it? Did you get that?
No pun intended, of course. No pun intended.
Dude, you know what? I'm not going to give you crap. That's a great era of Superman. That's actually Denny O'Neill did the interior and Neil Adams did the covers, but Kurt Swan and Murphy Anderson were doing the interiors.
Yes, you're right.
This is like 1971 or so, and that was just genuinely creepy when Superman loses half his powers.
Yeah.
In a big explosion and a creature from the sand, as you say, just rises up at the end of one issue, and so this Frankenstein-like creature, like half sand, half Superman, staggers up and starts to move, shuffling off into the distance, and then he stalks Superman for the next year. It's a great series of stories.
Yes.
Good call on your part.
What really also got me, Mark, is just the visuals. There were a lot of visuals there that really stayed with me. Obviously, the iconic cover of him busting through the kryptonite chains, that's like you see that everywhere pretty much.
Yeah.
And then you have that image of, again, you know, we grew up and we were introduced to Superman as being this newspaper reporter, I open up this book and here he is, a TV reporter, you know, and working for the television, you know. And then, of course, you have the scene of him chomping into the bite of kryptonite, and this this criminal's trying to scare him with it. And said, oh, you know what? It's not good. It's not a little bit rough, but it's still pretty good, you know. And he just eats the whole bite, you know.
Yeah, I believe needs salt was what he there said. We go. Yeah.
Exactly. I can confirm that, guys, because I have the Superman from the 30s to the 70s book.
Nice.
I just moved, and it's right there prominently on my bookshelf. Yep. And yes, he does. Let's see that line again. I'm going to get to it because I got to the part about will Superman have to wait for commercials?
Yep.
When Morgan Edge goes, Kent, you did great. I'm going to make this switch permanent.
That was a weird choice. Like I understand why in 1971 you'd want to move Clark Kent to television because nobody was reading newspapers even back then. That was the thinking.
Right.
But at the same time, you do kind of question the wisdom of a man whose whole identity is trying to. He's sort of kept behind a pair of glasses, and he's trying to keep a secret identity. Having his face on television, that seemed a lot.
And you know what, that whole period also, I mean, because I continued reading also into the 80s, of course, and yeah, that whole television period was just very surreal sometimes, you know, just, you know, having this idea of watching Clark Kent on a regular basis on TV, you know. It kind of, in some ways, it went against the fact that he was this trying to have this bumbling act. You know, so it's like all of a sudden now he's a movie star, TV star, you know, so it was, you know, I don't know. There were just a little.
Was it that around the same time he met Peter Parker?
He met Peter Parker. A little bit later.
Yeah, five years later he met Peter Parker, yeah.
But he was still at the television station in that crossover. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Well, you know, the 15 Cent era, that's when that story happened, the Kryptonite Nevermore. And as it's called.
Yes.
And I like seeing comics from that 15 Cent era because that is that end of the Silver Age before the Bronze Age period where DC was kind of like without a rudder and they were trying to be relevant the way Marvel was, Mark, would you agree? But didn't quite have the panache in that same collection from the 30s to the 70s. There's like a pollution story in there and you know, like Superman's at a rock concert and it's just like, yeah, you know, you just kind of got this vision of like, you know, guys that were used to writing older stories and stuff trying to be hip but not quite cutting it. Nothing.
You know what, and that's funny because, you know, I enjoy those movies, those comics, but when you kind of compare them, you're right, when you compare them to the Marvel stuff, you know, like that's why in some ways DC kind of fell behind in the 70s and 80s because, you know, Marvel was still, you know, doing this grown-up stuff, starting to do this, you know, you had the X-Men run with Claremont and Byrne, and so they were moving a little bit further up and DC was still at this certain level, you know, and but there were still great stories.
Yeah, you're right. They were anything but hip. That was the thing. They were trying to be a little hip, and they didn't succeed very well at that. But at the same time, the characters are timeless, which is pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and also they make now for really fun reading. I mean, that's the thing. You just got to – just like some people will crap on the more Weisinger era of Superman, like the 50s and 60s stuff. But it was really meant to be contemporary parody. And like, because it's like, why would Superman be with Pat Boone? And why is you know, Alan Flint from Candid Camera on there? Or why is Jimmy Olsen being a caveman beetle? And it's like because it was all kind of parodies of what was happening in the contemporary world.
Right. Right. And it's funny because every time I read that book, I actually went on eBay and bought the book for myself. I never had the courage to ask my dad if I could steal the book from school. But I wanted to keep that book. That book was just so important to me. So went on eBay and finally was able to get that copy, the original copy, the printing and everything. And it's one of my treasures. It's one of those treasures that I open up every once in a while. I was able to get it signed by Neil Adams well.
Oh, fun.
And got him signed. So, I mean, there are these stories. And then, of course, it has – I'm not sure if it's in that book. I can't remember very very clearly, but I don't remember if it's in that book, if anybody can check that out. But
who are you talking to? You don't check it out. I know what's in that. I know that book like I know the back of my hand. Go.
It's the story with Lori Lamaris. That story.
Oh yeah.
Is just so important to me also because that, I mean, I guess I felt in some way I fell in love with her also because for that one issue, like you just saw the best of what Superman wanted, what Kal-El wanted, and it was just all there in that one issue, and it was just incredible. It's beautiful. It was beautifully done, and even now when I bought the I recently bought the Showcase Presents Volume 1 of Superman, and that story's in there, and it's like, wow, yeah. That's so just so important. It is. It just meant to be, you know.
Yeah, you're right. That was just a beautiful story, showing that Clark can't. I mean, all he really was in love with the.
All right, we're having a little technical difficulty there. It might be because we have too many people on the call. So
yeah, I didn't hear anything of that, Mark. Sorry.
Oh no!
Yeah, hold on.
Okay.
Try it now, Mark.
I was going to say. Just no. It's a beautiful story because it's all about how. Really, at the end of the day, Superman wants somebody who's going to love Superman. Somebody who's going to love him despite the fact that he's
the man. All right, I'm going to suggest we call Mark. We're going to call you back. We're going to call you back, Mark. That's okay. We'll call you right back.
No, it's good. There you go. It's all Mark's fault. So,
yeah, because it wasn't.
By default, you win now, Rick. So,
why Superman is better than Superman? Winner.
Hey, woohoo, I finally won something.
Mr. Saucita.
There you go, exactly. Mark needs to know not to call us on high-tension wires next time. He's in Indiana. He's probably like Oliver Douglas on Green Acres, and he's probably up the phone pole.
Whoa.
Oh, that's true.
Gladys?
You know what? I have this sinking feeling in my stomach that my argument was so strong that he's just trying to fake the you know all this trouble you know to get off the line.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't think he's scared.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Right, we're trying to get Mark back now, calling in. Up.
Oh. All right, there we go. Stupid technical difficulties.
Yeah, there you are.
There we go.
Excellent. Good.
So we decided while you were away that Rick won the argument.
Oh no! You know what?
Failed out.
Nah, you know what? We're very close. We're very close in our air. I would still consider that. My Superman. I would still consider that my Superman. It's the mm-hmm. it's mine is more the more Weisinger era, but that's still in continuity. That's still all this stuff happened. So I'm good with that. Good answer. Rick, you in fact won the night. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And I'm just curious. I mean, this is just a quick question for you, Mark. Why do you think people did consider it too controversial? I mean, I guess, you know, I don't know if it was maybe the purist. I don't know what it was, but like, what is your opinion about that?
I think that it was considered too much, too fast in terms of change. I mean, that was the period where they got rid of half his powers, where they took Kryptonite away, where they made him a TV reporter, all within like no time at all, like in one story, boom. And I think that. And also, they didn't reflect any of those changes in the other Superman books. The continuity between the books wasn't that tight, so. It sort of wound its way down. Once Danny O'Neill left the book, like the next guys who came along, like Kerry Bates and Elliot Magan, they just slowly ramped his powers back to where they had been. But, you know, they brought Kryptonite back before the end of the decade. Actually, before the end of – just they brought Kryptonite back like within 2 or 3 years actually. So,
right.
Who was – and that's kind of what I was getting at when I was talking about what they were trying to do to be relevant. Who else was writing those Superman stories in that 15-cent era?
Well, it was – I mean you got Denny O'Neill taking point on the Superman books, but you over – you know, with Action Comics, you had Kerry Bates was doing them, and Leo Dorfman was another Superman writer who had been in the 60s. You know, that was pretty much your core group really, Kerry, Leo – you know,
had Alvin Schwartz already left by that point?
Yeah, he'd already left in like the late 50s, and then of course he left by 66, and so it's still a fairly small group of people who were willing to work with Weisinger. So yeah,
gotcha. All right, yeah, and I actually was thinking of Siegel recently because I bought the second volume of the Superman Dailies.
And I
didn't realize that and Mark and I know that they've culled a lot of your collection to make those books.
Yeah.
Am I right? And I didn't realize that Siegel was scripting those comic strips, and we've talked about it off the air how they were based on the Silver Age comics and were obviously reformatted and a bit more dialogue or whatever changes were made. I haven't really looked issue compared to comic strip to compare the newspaper presentation to the comic presentation.
Yeah, they were actually virtually word for word. My suspicion is that they really just took the same scripts and just made some editing notes. I mean, I'm not even joking.
Really?
I was doing some comparing over the weekend to the third volume and going back and forth.
Awesome.
And it's the same dialogue. It's the same shots. It's the same pacing. The only change they would make is every once in a while, if in the comics Supergirl showed up or the Bottle City of Kandor or something like that that would have required some explanation to the newspaper audience, they would make it a Superman robot or something that so it was a little easier to understand.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, I mean, they were doing the identical same stories.
Why would they have to make
Sundays,
it appear
were
the,
those original then or what, the Sundays?
Yeah, well, yeah, the dailies and the Sundays. It wasn't so much that they were trying to make it easier for them to understand, but it was, I think, with the newspaper strip, they sort of pretended that Superman was the only one of his kind.
Right.
I think that was the one conceit they made to the non-comics audience, this idea that they didn't want to drag in too much continuity from the comics because they were afraid it would be a little baffling to people who were reading it at three panels a day. So.
Right. Interesting. And, you know, like
– really not interesting, by the way. That's very kind of you, but that's the least interesting I've ever said. So.
No. No, but I remember being happy that Swan had initially been doing the comic strip, and you see that in half of volume one. Wayne Boring takes over, and they kind of basically switch jobs. Kurt does more interiors for the comic books. Wayne starts doing the comic strip. Did Boring do the comic strip through the rest of that 60s run?
He did it all the way from like 1960 up to the end of the strip in 1966. Those Kurt Swan strips, though, are just beautiful. I've got a bunch of them from 56 and 57 that haven't reprinted those yet. But they're not comics continuity at all. Like there's a whole giant stretch where Clark Kent adopts a Korean boy. Like a war orphan Korean boy, and he's adopted this kid for like a year and a half, and then they write him out of the strip.
Was he jealous of Batman?
Yeah,
either that or they were trying to do like Dondi, like Irwin Hassan.
I think they were doing like Dondi's popular with the kids. Let's do another Korean orphan boy over here.
And now we just lost all our audience because nobody knows what Dondi is.
Dondi.
Hey man, Irwin Hassan, kids, look it up. It's awesome. I told Irwin Hassan that when I met him in New York the first time years ago, like one of the first Reed New York shows. I'm like, dude, I love you for both your comics and comic strip, but I can tell you from my sister, we used to love Dondi, and it would like make us cry. It was so like beautiful. That poor little orphan boy. It's like, can't somebody just adopt him so he can have one family?
For 6 cents a day, for a cup of coffee a day. Could he eat?
You too can help somebody out here.
That's right.
Sally Struthers was a spokesman in between the panels.
Rick, what else do you want to ask? I keep wanting to call you Juan because of your avatar.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right, man.
You know, and I had a chance to – I had a good opportunity, Mark, in 2004 to meet you at probably the last time that Wizard World was in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was able to get a copy of Birthright signed
nice.
To you. Can you give me just a little bit of, I don't know, I guess your thoughts when you were starting writing Birthright? You know, like what did you want to – keep, what did you want to elaborate, what did you say was like out completely, what were your thoughts when you were writing Birthright?
I'll give you the quick rundown because I've sort of covered this ground a little bit in these podcasts before, and I don't want to bore anybody who's still with us after all that talk of Dondi, but but the short of it was that, you know, when they said please make the character contemporary for the 21st century, a lot of what I wanted decided what I wanted to keep and wanted to throw out and stuff. It all came back to what was the essence of Superman to me, and what are the things that you can't change about the character? The fact that he's from another planet, the fact that he's very much alone in the world. A lot of it, was about trying to. I drew a lot from these books that Elliot Magan wrote in the 70s,
yes.
These two Superman novels that he wrote, where
beautiful books.
Really hit upon the notion that when they were growing up, that Superman and Lex Luthor were friends, before Luther turned evil, because when you're Superboy, when you're the smartest kid in the world and you can see things that nobody else can see and you can hear things that nobody else can hear, it's got to be very lonely. It's got to be very – you know, you can – the Kents can try to make you feel like you're part of the family, and you can put glasses on and pretend to be a human being. But at the end of the day, you're experiencing the world in a way that nobody else can. Right. And this really touching idea that Lex Luthor also was very much the outcast kid in Smallville and the brainy boy that nobody else liked, and he was alone in his own way, and that the two of them found each other as friends, and then the tragedy of losing that friendship because Superboy made one mistake. Like he screwed up one little time and ended up costing the world this once in a lifetime genius that could have been a better place, like Einstein, that could have, you know, been like Jonas Salk or whatever, and instead he's building giant bank robbing robots.
Yeah. You know, these are some really great ideas. You ever thought about maybe writing a Superman story?
I know. they got my number. So.
and also I want to say real fast for people looking on eBay, Last Son of Krypton and Miracle Monday are the two paperbacks that Rick and Mark are talking about. And they're amazing. And so – and Artie knows too. And I and Mark sent Artie those books, didn't you, guys?
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing.
Cool, yeah.
Really.
You know, it's funny because, I mean, just talking about the books again, guys, what I love about the book is just – the idea that Einstein is preparing the way and getting all this stuff ready. I mean, that was just beautiful. That was just like, wow, that's
– that was a genius idea. That was – that for those who haven't read the books.
Hard
the
idea, one. Very hard one.
One of the ideas in Last Son of Krypton was the idea that Jor-El reached out to Earth to try to – you know, before he sent the rocket, to try to find someone to take Kal-El. And as a scientist, if you figure that – on Earth, you know, our humanity and compassion and so forth is just slightly more important to us than science. Like we are very, you know, as a human race, we are very, you know, at least, you know, we're very perceptive about science and rationality and reason is very important to us. But on Krypton, it was the reverse. It was that they were still very human. They were still very kind people, but they thought science above all else. Like they valued science above anything else as a human trait, your rationality and so forth. So when he reached out to Earth, he naturally went to Albert Einstein because he's the smartest man on Earth. Therefore, he must be the best man on Earth. It was Einstein who thought to himself in that story that, you know, I understand where he's coming from, but here on Earth we have a slightly different value system, and I better go find a kindly couple to take the Kents in. So he sets it up basically so that the Kents are in the right place at the right time to find the rocket ship. And I just thought that was a really nice little – I don't know. It just helped explain Kryptonians to me. So,
and Dr. Zaius would say that is why the Kryptonian apes were never able to conquer their human masters.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's awesome. That's freaking awesome.
So there you go, Rick. Well, thanks for calling in, dude. Thanks for letting us call you, and thanks for being a supporter of the All Yeah Kickstarter. Did you get your swag?
Yes, I did. You know what, guys? Great books, and don't let anybody else say anything about the time. Take all the time you need, guys. It's a quality.
Thank you.
Thanks. Wow, I'll pay you for saying that later. Thank you.
That's and been the hardest thing.
I gotta say, All Yeah Titans.
Man. Thank you for supporting. It's we're working on the next four books, trying to get them all out of here in people's hands by February.
I'm inking pages right now.
I'm coloring stuff right now. Awesome. Thank you so much.
I had this beautiful sketch of Speedy that you guys got drew for me, and he's dancing away, and I love it. I got it in San Diego, and it's beautiful, guys. So thanks a lot.
You're awesome.
Oh, right on.
Come on, sir.
Cool, man. You're awesome, dude.
Thank you. I am, man. Thanks for calling in, Rick. You're awesome.
Yeah, have a good night, Rick. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Mark. Take care of yourself. Okay.
Take care. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye. Well, that's not the end of the pod, though. It's just
no, it's not the end of the pod. No.
While you're queuing up. The next about Artie. So And Johnny, I think you know this story. When Artie was here in town doing a signing at our store, he did a Batman sketch for a little kid and did, you know, the hearts and stuff around it. And we, like an hour later, we get a call from some incensed grandmother. This is the true story. She was worried about her child because there's this man that drew a picture of Batman with little hearts all over it. And did she was afraid to bring the kid back in the store. Was the man propositioning her? What was going on? So
that did not happen, did it?
It totally. My hand to God, that happened. Like we had. First of all, that you never bring your child back. I don't know. We said
it's okay. The man's gone now.
Yeah, we said it's okay. The scary man is gone now. No, so, like an amber. Like kid didn't think anything of it, but it was. You know, every once in a while in the Midwest, you run into. Yeah. Somebody who's a little more conservative than the rest of the group. And that was just – and, it, you know, we put her mind at ease. But that was so weird and random. She was just – I don't know. He drew little hearts all over Batman. We don't know if we should bring our son back to the store.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. When I was first starting, I have my comic was called The Craybaby Adventures. And they were they're all white with round heads and they – they're fighting slime monsters, and I had a lady look through the book and wanted to know what my orientation was. And I'm like, why? She goes, well, you can't be normal if you're drawing these type of cartoons. And what are these guys supposed to be? And I'm like, they're just characters. And so she was real disturbed by whatever I was making. She didn't understand how I guess 6'3" guy, 230 pounds, could sit there and draw characters for kids. So I let her go. You know, it's like whatever. Lady.
Do the Craybabies have genitalia or not?
They're smooth, like Smurfs.
Smooth, yeah.
Smooth.
Yeah.
They are smooth.
And it's funny because the Craybabies came out the same time Jeff Smith's Bone came out, and we're very similar, and they look similar, and plus his is called Bone.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened there. You know. So
nice.
I got over it. Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot.
This is all very fun and interesting, but I have to tell you, Mark, I think you're off the hook because we can't get in touch with the other person who said they were going to be here. And they're not. So thank you so much for doing this. But I did. I've tried emailing him and texting him, and I got no response. So you are more than welcome to hang out and talk with us for as long as you like. But
I can hang out for a few minutes, and in the meantime, if for some reason the guy later gets a hold of you, you know, we'll make arrangements. We'll figure out something because we, you know, he was a good enough guy to buy on the Kickstarter. We'll, you know, we'll make accommodations. So. So what else have you guys seen lately that's any good? Anything good?
I was thinking of something earlier, but I didn't want to interrupt Juan. I forgot what his name. Nick?
Rick.
Rick. You said that he met Peter Parker, Clark Kent met Peter Parker 5 years later?
Like, yeah. And
what did you think about the first Superman, Spider-Man?
That blew my crossover. Mind.
Right?
I have no idea what it's – I waited. All right, so – in the part of Alabama I grew up, there was no distribution of anything other than a 32-page comic. Anything that was like a giant or a tabloid or anything like that, you couldn't get it where I lived. So when my mom would come to visit and pick me up for like – you know, I stayed with her every other weekend for a while. I was living with my dad. And so I would just stand there on the front porch on a Friday afternoon after school for my mom to come pick me up. Not that I didn't love my mom, but what I was really eager for was to find out what comics she'd brought.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Nice.
And, you know, that thing was $2.
Mm-hmm.
That thing was two – that's a lot of money in 1976 when comics cost a quarter, you know?
Yep.
And you know what I remember when I read that was, you know, these guys are all over the city all the time. Why haven't they met each other before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was very confused by that. I'm like, they're just meeting each other now?
Well, come on, they're two different cities. You have to give it that. It's Metropolis and New York.
Yeah, but I didn't know that as a kid. I just thought it was all the same city. Come on now.
When that book first came out, I went shopping with my mom. I was like six, maybe. And we went grocery shopping at the Jewel. Or Chicago, we call it the Jewels. Yeah. You know, we went to the Jewels shopping. And I always look at the comics. And I saw the book. And it's weird because I wouldn't do that these days. But my mom left me there so I could read the book. And then when she was done shopping, she'd come get me. And I remember I wanted it. And she wouldn't buy it because it was $2. And I didn't get it, or I didn't read it fully or get the book later till I was like about 30 years old.
And oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, it took – because I never saw it for a good price or whatever it was. But now I have two copies because I bought a copy. The copy I bought, the first one was $6. And it wasn't – the cover was attached kind of. But it was a little ripped, but I just wanted it because I wanted to read it. I didn't know what happened, but I remember them fighting, and then I read it, and it was real cool. But then I got another one for like $10. I got a little upgraded one, so I got two. But I've always had that second part when Dr. Doom and the Parasite team up to fight them. That was, man, that one I read over and over and over. And that was the first, because I remember the original one, but then I really got a hold of that second one, and I remember getting it like for Easter or because I was sick or something, so my mom and dad would buy me Star Wars magazines and Superman stuff, so because of the movies and stuff. So that's how I got that one. So that was awesome.
That was a cool one too. That was John Buscema, right? That was John Buscema. Yeah, that's right.
In the
John
Hulk
Buscema draw Superman. Yeah,
yeah. Hulk and Wonder Woman were in it too.
Yeah,
and I remember Spider-Man made a Star Wars reference. Because he was fighting Wonder Woman, and they were in some kind of warehouse or some facility or some science thing. And he says, wow, it's like being in a Star Wars film. I remember him saying that. So I was freaking out. Wow, he saw Star Wars.
I always loved that one. I always loved that one Treasury Edition Superman comic that had the oil painting for a cover.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who painted that? Do you know?
Yeah. It was a guy named Hugh Ward, W-A-R-D.
Yeah.
He did a bunch of pulp magazine paintings in the 20s and 30s, and then he did that painting. And then a few years later, I'm trying to remember who it was, who did – it was one of the Superman artists at the time, and I'm blanking suddenly on the name. But he redid the face to make it look a little bit more like the Superman we know. But that original painting –
yeah.
It's in a library somewhere. It's like they found it recently after years and years of nobody knowing where it was. I'm trying to remember what city it's in, but it's actually in like a city library somewhere, and well, they tracked it down.
Yeah, the DC archive library has something like that. Hanging in their lobby when you walk right in.
Yeah,
is it a copy or is it a?
I think it might be a copy or something.
Was it Wynn Mortimer that redid the face?
No,
I wouldn't say it was okay.
It was, gosh, I'm blanking. I can't.
A 40s Superman artist?
Yeah.
Would it be a 40s artist?
Well, I'm blanking. Why am I forgetting? It's not.
Yeah.
It'll come to me. No, it'll come to me. It's
okay.
It's not like Wayne Boring. It's not one of the, it's the same guy who did the famous cover of Superman with the eagle on his arm standing in front of the American shield.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. Now I totally see that because I was thinking more of like the War Bond kind of World War II covers for World's Finest that it looked like that kind of Superman to me.
Yeah, and I can't believe Fred Ray, that's who it was.
Oh, Fred Ray, of course, sure.
I was thinking of, so.
Yes, yes.
I believe that was who did it. Was, if not him, it was one of the other contemporaries of those guys, who one of the early Schuster guys who – you know what's – but that's not the cool thing about that tabloid. The cool thing about that issue is that's the one with four pages of Neil Adams artwork where they show what Superman – the Superman amusement park in Metropolis was supposed to look like.
That's cool.
You know what – go ahead, sir.
No, I was going to say that – which, by the way, when I die – that's where my spirit goes. That's, you know, you think you're, when Mark Waid gets hit by a bus eventually or finally has that heart attack that, you know, he's only one staircase away from having, you can just think to himself, well, he's at Superman land now. It's okay. It's this amazing. Have you guys seen this thing that I'm talking about, this blueprint for Superman amusement park?
Yes,
no.
Of course. It's in one of the Treasury editions.
Yeah,
talk about it.
Show it. Yeah, next time you're at the store, Johnny, bring it over and show them. It's in Metropolis, Illinois, in the early 1970s, is the only town in America with the name Metropolis, right? Mm-hmm. So even though it's the size of my house, I've been there. It's like a Dairy Queen and a Burger King and a post office, and that's it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, Artie's been down there too for that.
Oh yeah,
I was there last year for the
Superman celebration, yes.
Yeah.
But this is years before that, so go on.
So what happened in the early 70s, they made a deal with DC where they would get like a Disneyland-style amusement park built around Superman and it's this beautiful drawing. It's this thing that's the size of Disneyland with this giant – and Neil Adams did the blueprints and the workups on it. It's like this 200-foot tall statue of Superman standing in front of the amusement park, and you go in and it's like, here's Bizarro World and here's Smallville and here's Fortress of Solitude. And there's this beautiful artwork, this concept artwork and stuff. And they had a deal with DC. They had backers. They had money. And then the gas crisis hit in 74.
They were actually going to build this thing?
Yeah.
Wow.
To build this thing. And then 73, 74, the gas crisis hit. So suddenly nobody was traveling.
Right.
And the proposed freeways that were going to go near the city were rerouted. And so suddenly you couldn't get there anyways. And then, if you can't take a freeway there, it's not going to – nobody can just casually drive to Metropolis. So that thing just went up in smoke. But in my mind, it still exists. I still go there. So
I understand. No, dude, that was so cool. Again, they definitely put it in one of those Treasury editions.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Neil had like this, as you walk in the park in his conceptual arc, you almost like walk between Superman's legs, and his cape kind of like draped over a good section of the park.
Right.
And it's just this like gigantic idea of like, this great thing. And they had like trophy rooms, just like the fortress and statues to Jor-El and Lara.
Yeah. Like a giant Fortress of Solitude mountain in the back of the thing that was literally like 1-to-1 scale. I mean, like that, the scale it would be if you were Superman. It was this the giant Matterhorn, Disney Matterhorn mountain type thing that was that big. And so, somewhere there's an alternate universe out there where that place exists. And I work there. It's like, I sweep the streets at night. I shine the trophies.
We're force mark guys. I mean, if we put our heads together, I think we can make it happen.
We got Jimmy the Muscle. He's got a shovel.
There you
so
go.
We can start digging.
Got it, dude. Checking out Eagle Eye.
Where do you want the fortress again? Over here? Okay.
No problem, dude.
The key's very
That's
heavy.
Awesome.
I can't lift it.
any fun? Oh, I'm sorry. Please.
No, I was going to say, on that note, it is getting a little late on this end. I'm going to have to split because it's New York time.
Yeah,
so.
But you've been generous with your time. I was going to ask real quick, anything funny at the Marvel Summit that you can share?
My big impassioned speech on the last day about why the Black Panther is a really cool character that I could totally understand. And I did like, cause somebody else in the room was like, well, I don't really get the Black Panther. So I did like 10 minutes on the Black Panther and why he was cool. And at the end of it, Axel Alonso said to me something that nobody has ever said to me before. He said, man, I wish you were black. So if you were black, I'd let you write that book in a heartbeat, but you're the whitest guy we know. We can't let you write the Black Panther. I'm like, I get it. I understand. I'm not offended.
That's like Michael Jordan in Space Jam saying that Larry Bird is not white. He's clear.
Yeah.
You're kind of clear, too.
Exactly.
So that works. Well, Mark, you did double duty. You did an podcast, and likely this will be part of the next Word Balloon as well.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime you need me, I'm here. Good for it any time. So we will talk soon.
Thank you. Yes,
you're a good
sir.
Man, sir.
You're awesome, sir.
Take care, sir. Thanks.
Right. Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, man. Okay, bye-bye.
Special guest Mark Waid laying down the law. Yay.
There you go. If you want to hear the rest of that conversation, we continue and actually had about 20 minutes before and about 15 or 20 minutes afterwards with me, Art, and Franco doing our usual thing. Go to the Aw Yeah podcast in the most recent episode, and you can check out all the action there. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of Word Balloon. It was brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. To close out the year, there are a lot of great deals going on at InStock Trades, including saving up to 70% on select Marvel and DC titles. Now, that sale ends on December 31st. So check out all the value that you can get over there, and I'll give you a few examples of things, both DC, Marvel, and even otherwise, that are available. You can get the Identity Crisis 10th Anniversary Hardcover. Can you believe that it's the 10th anniversary already for Brad Meltzer and Rag Morales' excellent miniseries? 42% off. It's just $17.39. You can get the Gallery Edition Hardcover of Batman, done by Kelly Jones. Man, awesome stuff. Had the pleasure of finally meeting Kelly and having him on Word Balloon this year. And this is just a great thing. And I know he's got more cool things coming up. He did a backup, I know, in Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Endgame arc that's going on right now. But I think there's more Batman coming from Kelly in 2015. But celebrate by grading this excellent Gallery Edition hardcover 20% off. It's just $100 at InStockTrades.com. Our pal Steve Bryant has the Athena Voltaire Compendium. That's the full collection of Athena Voltaire stories up to this point. 42% off. It's just $11.59. From my guy Brian Bendis, you can get all new X-Men Trade Paperback Volume 4, 42% off, just $11.59. Another Gallery Edition collection, you can get the John Buscema Silver Surfer Artist Edition hardcover. It's $99.99. All of that is waiting for you at InStockTrades.com, plus a whole hell of a lot more. Check out all the details for yourself, InStockTrades.com. John Sutcher saying thanks again for listening to Word Balloon. Thank you, League of Word Balloon listeners, for your continued support. I truly appreciate it and look forward to seeing everybody at conventions in 2015. 2015 is a big year for Word Balloon. That's our 10th anniversary, and lots of fun things are going to be happening in 2015. But we manage to have fun every week, don't we? It's always a pleasure to bring you these great conversations and give you insight on what's going on between the ears of your favorite comic creators and pop culture people, and we will continue to do that as much as possible in 2015. And I, you know, there's no like mystery when I say as much as possible. It'll be happening every week as we always do. And we got one more show for you before the end of 2014. So be sure to stick around. Great stuff coming up. Until next time, thank you. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2014.